हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 102, Adhikarana 14, Partiality and Cruelty in the Lord. Vaishamya Nyer Grinya Dikaranam, Sutra Reference 2.134, Adhikarana Prakashita. This Adhikarana certifies that the Supreme Lord is neither cruel nor unjust in his act of creating the material world, right? Because it's going to come up as that he's not creating. Right, because there's faults, there's this, there's that, and if he was creating, he'd be part of that. But because he's interacting with his internal potencies transform as the external, then actually he's in control of it, so he can do that. Then the next point that comes up, okay, so then he's the one to blame for all my trouble. Right? That's going to be exact next thing. Because we never want to take the blame ourselves, so it's been said, it's by our karma. By our activities, but it's always, well, why did he make us this way? He could have made us some other way. Yeah, you could also act some other way also. Why is it just he has to adjust, right? You know, yeah. Later in his work, Srila Vyasadeva in Vedanta Sutra 2.340, Krita prayatna pekshas tu vihita prati siddha vayarta adhi vyaha demonstrates that considering the effort that the jiva makes in terms of dharma and adharma, the Lord makes him act. Demonstrate that considering the effort that jiva makes in terms of dharma and adharma, the Lord makes him act. Okay. The Lord acts only after the jiva acts, in accordance with the scriptures or opposed to the scriptures. Hence, the Shastric injunctions and prohibitions are not useless, and the Lord is not liable to the charge of partiality and cruelty. Summary of Adhikarna 14. Bhishaya. We see that some people are born into favorable conditions, while others are born into difficult situations. We also observe that sometimes an apparently innocent person is punished, or a blameworthy person prospers. Some philosophers and theologians interpret this to mean that God is either not omnipotent or is partial and unfair. If God were equal to everyone, then he is not omnipotent, because he is capable of creating a situation where everyone is offered an equal opportunity to prosper and enjoy life. And if he is omnipotent, then he is unfair, because although all souls are inherently equal, we see that some are more fortunate and others less fortunate, and sometimes there is injustice. Samshaya, is maintaining that Brahman is the creator correct or not? Purvapaksha, it is not correct, since there would be inequality or harshness. Vaishamya in Brahman, since he would have created devatas and humans who are subject to happiness and suffering. This contradicts Shrutis, which say that Brahman is without fault. Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva refutes this proposition in the next sutra. Sutra 2.134. Vaishamya ner grinye na sapek shavat tata hi darshayati. Vaishamya, partiality, na grinye na, cruelty, na, not, supek shatvat, because of having regard for karma. Tata, so he certainly, darshayati, the scriptures declare. The Lord is neither prejudiced nor cruel because bodies are created according to karma. Scripture shows this. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar refutes the opponent's blame about the Lord being harsh by quoting Shruti, stating that the jiva is responsible for his own karma, good or bad. In his latter work, the Sutrakar explains the Vedanta Sutra 2.3.31, Karta Shastrartha Vat Vat, that the jiva is the performer of actions, karma, since this gives meaning to the scriptural injunctions. If the jiva were not the doer, scriptures would become meaningless. Further, in Vedanta Sutra 2.3.33, Upadanat, Srila Vyasadeva confirms that the jiva is indeed the performer of karmas, because the scriptures describe him so. Hence, the jiva is the direct cause, and the Lord is the indirect cause. Footnote 47. Srila Prabhupada explains the current sutra 2.134 in his purports to the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita 4.14. As there are constitutional laws in the material world stating that the king can do no wrong, or that the king is not subject to the state laws, similarly the Lord, although he is the creator of this material world, is not affected by the activities of the material world. He creates, remains aloof from the creation, and remains aloof from the creation, whereas the living entities are entangled in the fruit of results of material activities because of their propensity for lording it over material resources. The proprietor of an establishment is not responsible for the right and wrong activities of the workers, but the workers are themselves responsible. The living entities are engaged in the respective activities of sense gratification, and these activities are not ordained by the Lord. For advancement of sense gratification, the living entities are engaged in the work of this world, and they aspire to heavenly happiness after death. The Lord, being full in himself, has no attraction for so-called heavenly happiness. The heavenly demigods are only his engaged servants. The proprietor never desires the low-grade happiness such as the workers may desire. He is aloof from the material actions and reactions. For example, the rains are not responsible for different types of vegetation that appear on earth, although without such rains there is no possibility of vegetative growth. The Vedic Smriti confirms this fact as follows. Nimitta matram eva sau srinjanam sarga karmani pradana karani bhuta yatova srija shaktayaha. In the material creation, the Lord is the supreme cause. The immediate cause is material nature, by which the cosmic manifestation is visible. The created beings are of many varieties, such as the demigods, human beings, and lower animals, and all of them are subject to the reactions of their past good or bad activities. The Lord only gives them the proper facilities for such activities and regulations of the modes of nature, but he is never responsible for their past and present activities. In the Vedanta Sutra 2.134, it is confirmed, Vaishamya nair grin. Grinye na sapek shatvat. The Lord is never partial to any living entity. The living entity is responsible for his own acts. The Lord only gives him facilities through the agency of material nature, the external energy. Anyone who is fully conversant with all the intricacies of this law of karma, or fruit of activities, does not become affected by the results of his activities. In other words, the person who understands the transcendental nature of the Lord is an experienced man in Krishna consciousness, and thus he is never subjected to the laws of karma. One who does not know the transcendental nature of the Lord, and who thinks that the activities of the Lord are aimed at fruit of activities, as are the activities of the ordinary living entities, certainly becomes entangled himself in fruit of reactions. But one who knows the supreme truth is a liberated soul fixed in Krishna consciousness. Bhagavad Gita 9.9. One should not think in this connection that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no engagement. In his spiritual world, he is always engaged. In the Brahma Samhita 5.6, it is stated, Atmaramasya tasyasti prakritya na samagamaha. He is always involved in his eternal blissful spiritual activities, but he has nothing to do with these material activities. Material activities are being carried on by his different potencies. The Lord is always neutral in the material activities of the created world. This neutrality is mentioned here with the word udasinavat. Although he has control over every minute detail of material activities, he is sitting as if neutral. The example can be given of a high court judge sitting on his bench. By his order, so many things are happening. Someone is being hanged. Someone is being put into jail. Someone is awarded a huge amount of wealth. But still, he is neutral. He has nothing to do with all that gain and loss. Similarly, the Lord is always neutral, although he has his hand in every sphere of activity. The Vedanta Sutra 2.134 is stated, Vaishamya nai grinye na. He is not situated in the dualities of this material world. He is transcendental to these dualities, nor is he attached to the creation and annihilation of this material world. The living entities take their different forms in the various species of life according to their past deeds, and the Lord doesn't interfere with them. So that's the basic point, is that the living entity, he by his desire is taking part. And then he is awarded the results based on whether it follows Shastra or it doesn't follow Shastra. Right? So whatever it is in Shastra, if he's following Shastra, what is the activities being done? What is the reward being given by that? Then they get that. If they're not following Shastra, what would be the reaction for not following? Then they get that. So in this way, they're the doer, because they identify as the doer. Mm-hmm. Right? We can understand that actually Krishna is the ultimate cause. So it's only by him, his potencies, and all these things that things are able to happen. But the jiva, they have choice. So they can choose to take part. So he's the doer because he's the one that wants to be involved in it. Right? That it's mechanically taken care of by the Lord's energies, the modes of nature, and that's not the point. He's the one that, you know, it's just like, let's say a machine. You push the button, the machine does the work. Yes. Right? Yes. But you're the one that started the process. Yes. Right? So the opportunities are there, and the living entity can make a choice to be involved in a particular process. So the result of that goes to the living entity. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's how karma works. Now, if you understand is that it's all about Krishna, then whatever you do is just about Krishna. Then you're not involved in this action-reaction. The action-reaction, the result's Krishna's. Because it's for him. So you're doing things to please Krishna, so it's the best for Krishna.
They don't know the law of karma, so they say the Lord is cruel.
Even you do. Have you not heard devotees try to blame Krishna for all their problems? And why, you know, I'm doing this bad like that, Krishna knows, why doesn't he? Because you have free will. You know, we want free will when we see the benefit for ourselves, and when we see the reaction to our free will, then now it's Krishna's problem. You know, so in other words, basically you can see is what's happening here in all these different situations. These are all the Vedic contexts of philosophy. So these will be to the limit of discussion of philosophy, basically, that you can get in technical wise. And so, you know, you're dealing with people who are very smart, very qualified. At the same time, as you'll see that these basic concepts and these are there in a wide range of people. You know, maybe less complicated, less technical, but the principle of it's the same. So you see, is what we're dealing with is that if someone understands Krishna and is trying to serve Krishna, that's actually mature. And if one's not, then that's actually childish, right? Because children, they do things, they want things to happen the way they want, though they're not responsible, right? That's a childish mentality. So it takes time for them to understand that, you know, about action, reaction, and responsibility and all those things. So even though we may be dealing with adults and very qualified people in the world, they can, you know, make things happen on the, you know, intellectual, economic, political, you know, social, art, all these different things. They can do amazing stuff, but they're still basically like children. So, because we generally think of, oh, if you say someone's a child, means he doesn't have knowledge and skill, you know, in that way. But the Vedas, when they say someone's a child, it's because their mentality of not seeing things as they are and being irresponsible and just being based on their own desire and whims, that's what it's about. So that's why then Jarabharat is calling Maharaj Ruhugana, you know, immature.
Yes.
Right? Not that he's not a king running his kingdom and doing that, but as far as his perspective of how he views the world, that's immature.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's appreciated, then, you know, children, you have to take care, you have to do this, and you try to train. So it gives a whole different approach to preaching and dealings because you're trying to help. Right? Rather than it's a challenge, it's a fight, it's an argument. That's why it says Vaishnavas aren't interested in arguments. Did you argue with a kid? No. You explain to them, you show them what's right, you know, things like that. Right? Means you'll deal in the tone of voice and words and language and everything of an adult because they have adult skills. Right? So you'll deal on the level of skills. So yes, the child you'll talk to in simpler language and like that, and the adult you'll talk in more complex. But the mentality you're dealing with is actually still that of a child when it comes to these metaphysical spiritual platforms. Right? On the physical, sensual, emotional, they may be, you know, more mature. But on another, they're not. Is that somebody says? Yeah.
We find that from the beginning of discussion, you know, the opponents were of the opinion that Brahman is impersonal, he has no form and things like that. And now the entire discussion has shifted the focus, you know, to that whether the Lord essence is or not, whether he is partial or close, the attributes have come into the picture. So is it that now they have begun to appreciate the personal form of the Lord?
Have they begun to appreciate? No. All that is just different arguments. It's just like, basically, someone will use any argument as long as it wins the argument for them. They don't have to have faith in it. It's just that logically it works. That's why we can't put much faith in logic. Not that the logic doesn't, let's say, establish something in a, technically appropriate way. Right? But the point is it doesn't mean that you've changed the consciousness of the person just because you won the argument. That's why we don't put the effort into logic, that by defeating someone in logic, then actually the truth has been established. Because truth means how they are going to experience it. Right? Because remember what we were saying before on the psychological platform. Is what the samskar, how you experience it for you, that's concrete. And the environment you're working in, that's abstract. So even though you defeated them and established the absolute truth in the argument, that for them is abstract. Now how they take that and in their own, with their own previous experience and their false identity or their particular identity, how now they interpret that, that's just going to be concrete for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so is it now that, okay, their philosophy is been defeated, and so then, you know, a higher reality is being presented, and so then they can see is, okay, then I should surrender to this. But then what's their identity?
Mm-hmm.
Their identity has to be someone who's an actual seeker of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
They're not attached to any particular position. They're just seeking. So if you can show something higher, they'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But now what happens if that's not their mentality? They just think they're super intelligent and, you know, whatever they say then, you know, always stands. They always, you know, win an argument and all that. Now if you defeat that person in an argument, even though you presented very nice things, how is he going to interpret it? Right? His identity is being challenged. So for him, it will be a bad experience.
Mm-hmm.
So in some scars that, you know, your philosophy and all this is not good. Even though you've shown logically, and they claim to be a logician, that is superior. Because the point is the external of what's there, the facts, are actually abstract. That's why you see someone will take a fact and use that to defeat someone in argument. That, you know, the fact is like this, why you're saying that, you're wrong. Right? Does that make sense? So with others, it's just you're wrong. Yes. Now when they come to themselves and you show the facts about themselves that they're also wrong, then it's a matter of, then they go into the concrete. No, but, you know, I feel like it because that's concrete. So in other words, you defeat everybody else, you'll ignore the other's concrete and just use the abstract. And when it comes to yourself, then you're going to use the concrete. That'll always sweep. That's how they win on both sides. You know, it's not about actually finding truth or knowledge and this and that. It's that in their opinion, in their concrete, they feel you're wrong. So then they'll use facts and figures to prove you're wrong.
Yes.
Right? But if you try to, if you've defeated their facts and figures, which are abstract, so it's external, but the real thing is, no, this is what I feel. So therefore it's right. So for them, they win on both sides. So even though they claim to be, maybe claim to be sensitive and caring and about people, they will always, those they don't care about, they'll use the abstract, and for those they do, they'll use the concrete. So that's why you see the same person is so intelligent at the same time so just emotional. It makes no sense. Because the whole point is it's about themselves, that what they do is right. I am right, I'm a good person, or I'm a fabulous, whatever it is that I identify. So that can't be wrong, because if I don't have an identity, how do I function?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we're dealing in environments that are not using tradition. In tradition, it's defined what your identity is.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have something to fall back on. Okay, if that didn't work, then okay, in doing what I did, the identity remains, I just made a mistake.
Yes.
Right? But in the modern, because there is no set identity, the identity is based on a, you know, one's own concrete emotional feelings.
Yes.
Therefore, when you're proven wrong, your whole existence is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why then they lash out, they fight, you're attacking me, it's like that, you don't care about me. What do you mean? We were discussing a logical point. And then they go off on this emotional. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's what you're dealing with. That's why this, you know, these modern context, you know, social and political contexts that are not based on tradition, you know, or based on Shastra, they make them up by their feelings. And so, therefore, you can't actually have real conversations with them. Because every word you use, even though it has, it's traditionally used in one way, they've attributed a new definition to it because how they feel. And then because of that, then you're attacking, you're this, you don't care, you're insensitive, and this and that. At the same time, they can use these, what do you call them? You know, broad generalizations against people they don't, or groups that they don't like. Right? Very, and it's normal, because it's their emotional feeling. But then if you use it and they have a feeling about a word, then you're wrong there. Because it's all about their feelings. It's not about what is the facts, though they're trying to present it that way. But ultimately, for the living entity, it's not about the facts. It's how they interpret it, how they experience it. So that's why then one has to have the proper understanding of who you are, so your identity actually supportive of a progressive. So if you see, I'm the soul, I'm not the body, I'm servant of Krishna. And in being servant of Krishna, I follow the authorities of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Then you can't be personally attacked by the externals of your conditioning. Yeah, that's the first thing. First thing is, you just make them with double mufflers. Then they'll be quiet, like a Rolls Royce. Makes no sound, and it's got a motor bigger than that. Huh? Yeah, but they would just have more mufflers. I mean, we're not talking about that the guy has to have you know, bucket seats and, you know, reclinable with the, you know, memory and it heats and all that. Where, you know, he's got this stainless steel funny metal seat, but meaning that if you put a second muffler on there, you wouldn't hear anything.
Where's the fun?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, otherwise, how can you sit there all day if it doesn't make any sound?
If we don't have strong, I mean, if we have sometimes problems in Krishna consciousness, it's usually because of the lack of strong identity.
Yes.
And it means when we say, for example, Kanishthas, they can be easily defeated by those who are stronger than themselves, especially in philosophy. It's also related.
Yes, because they'll be looking at externals. Mm. See, because on externals you can be defeated. On the primary, can you ever be defeated? Because it's Krishna. That's it. So how it connects to Krishna. And so then anything that's not connecting to Krishna, they're dealing with an external. So it's a matter of those who have better logical skills that can win an argument. That's why we don't put that much faith in logic. We use logic, and the explanations will be logical. But it's not about logic. Logic doesn't establish the absolute truth. So that principle of, I mean, the primary, when you have faith in the primary, then no matter, you can always see through the secondary, because the secondary is always supportive of the primary. Right? But when you're looking at secondary, for you is more prominent than the primary, then you can get distracted. Because that has all the emotions, all the feelings, and all the this and that on that material platform. So you can get distracted. So even, let's say, you have two people, they're good at argument. Right? But now one of them has more arrogance, and the other one maybe doesn't. So then he can, but not necessarily that they're confident. So they can lose their, what would be the word that comes up is their nerve. You know? So in other words, they aren't emotionally strong enough. You know, because in the fight, someone else may be, you know, very aggressive, and they can't handle that aggression. If someone's weaker than them, then they do fine. But their logical skills are the same.
Folding the knife.
Sorry?
Folding the knife.
Yeah, that means the one strong, he can do, the other one lose. So one loses, one holds, like this and that. There's other terms. Yeah. But, so, in here, so even though, let's say you are very strong as a personality, doesn't matter what the other person thinks, you will not be disturbed. So then you'll take a moment, you'll think about it, you'll find an answer, right? Because it's not that it takes time, it's always just a nanosecond later than, you know, it's just like something comes up, you say something, and then right after that you think, well, I should have said this.
Yes.
Right? So it's just a matter of, you sit there. They've made a statement. There's no rule that you have to immediately answer back. So then you can sit and think, because you have that faith, you have that determination. And so they've said this, and then you think, well, no, that approach, or you take it into something else, or that, because you're fixed in the primary aspect. That's why they can't be defeated. Not that the Uttamadikari is a great logician. It's just that they are fixed in devotional service, fixed in that faith in Krishna. And so then Krishna will give the intelligence. They'll be able to use it nicely. While the other one can only use intelligence according to the karma. You know what I'm saying? So the ability is not that the Uttamadikari has studied the grammar so much, and the logic so much. Not that they can't, like Jiva Goswami did. You know, just because he wanted to also be able to grammatically and all that present it very strongly, and he's the best. Right? You know, when we say he's the, you know, greatest scholar in the contemporary age, we basically mean that. Contemporary means what's happening now. So, you know, from Kali Yuga to now, he's the greatest logician. And, you know, for the next 10,000 years, he'll be, you know, so during that time span. You won't get a greater logician than him. Like that. So, but it's the determination in Krishna that you'll find something. Like you see Prabhupada when he presents, he will use really simple points, but he'll always defeat the argument. Because it's always about Krishna. Because the materialistic mentality, you're trying to take it into something other than Krishna. It's because of some external aspect, but it's not. You always bring it back to the primary. So what does a materialist have to say about the primary? I mean, zero. They don't think about it. They don't know about it. So how can they? They only think about secondary. And because of this, there's that, this, that. But you show us, no, it's all connected to Krishna. Like that. So it comes down to faith, actually. So because they put their faith in external things, then you can defeat them in argument in external, and it'll disturb their faith in Krishna. Because they have faith in the external. Does that make sense? So like that. But when it's all about Krishna, just like, okay, you have the Vedic system. Oh, but you know, yeah, but there's the caste system. There's discrimination there and all that. And then because you think secondary, and then, you know, you value yourself as a more kind of, you know, liberal person. And that, yeah, we have to be more equal and all that. Yeah, he's got a point there. And this and that, and now what to do. And so you get bewildered. But if you look at it from the other, is that no, it's Krishna's system. And so everybody's in their system. The equality is there. Everybody can be anywhere in the system, but then they have to function in the system that way. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like anybody could be the president, but you just have to function and work and have that function, put your effort in that capacity. Not that you today decide you want to be the president. You are. No, you have to put in your effort. You know what I'm saying? So that's then how it works. It's not coming by some other system, right? So therefore it is, if you're looking at the soul's eternal, and he's been here a long time. So everybody starts out, but it's what they do with what they do. You know, because otherwise then there shouldn't be such a thing as business, there shouldn't be this and that. It just should be, everybody should get the same result. But two people have the same investment, they go into business, one makes money, one doesn't. Why? Because of their effort. You know, what they do, what all these different things. Right? So therefore, it's how Krishna made it. They all have, and the point is equality on the externals? Because is there an equality between that column and that chair? So now either the chair should be made out of brick, or the column should be made out of plastic. You know, that's red, that's brown, so then both of them have to be the same color, and you know what I'm saying? So then you can see as all these things ultimately come down to their impersonalists. All this kind of liberal is all impersonal. They claim to be personal, but that's why you accept their philosophy. It's like the Mayavadis. They'll talk about bhakti, they'll talk about karma yoga, and you know, and naishkarmya and all that, and they'll do, you know, they'll talk to big audiences of grihasthas and all that, because that's where the money is, that's where the support is, that's where the, you know, distinction, adoration, and profit is. But if you ask them behind doors, you know their position, they'll say, well, you know, they're not in a very good position. You know what I'm saying? So they present themselves as very nice and wonderful and everything like that, but actually they're not interested. They're impersonalists. So in the same way, as you present this liberal kind of thing, not that liberalness is not important. We see Manu talks about being liberal and all that, but liberal means that you're considerate of others. But you can be considerate as groups and as individuals, right? So it's like you're trying to be considerate with everybody according to their position. Well, then here, you know, and there's definitions for those positions. Well, in the modern, there's no definitions. What someone's supposed to be, this, that, it doesn't. There's no definition. It's just whatever they feel like. So they're actually impersonalists. Though they claim to be personal, they're impersonal. Right? And the ones they say are impersonal, you know, all the conservatives, then they're very, you know, they get right into their community. Like that. So that's the thing, is that it's in the world of duality, everything always has these opposite aspects. You know, so the seeming personal are impersonal. The seeming impersonal are personal. That's the problem with the material world. You're always dealing with these contradictory things that can't be reconciled. So only on the spiritual platform can they be reconciled. So then the neophyte stops looking at things from the external. He starts to look at more from the internal. So he may not be very solid, but he's enough to be steady in that kind of perspective. Then that's the Madhyama. Then they don't get as disturbed. So you might defeat them in an argument, because they're not as fixed on the primary as the Uttama. But they don't have that faith in the secondary like the neophyte does. Right? So therefore, even you defeat them, they don't lose their faith. They'll go think about it and this and that and work out a better argument. Like that. It doesn't stir. But the neophyte, because they put their faith in the external, though Krishna is there, but because they're such strong in the external, so some areas they may be very strong in their Krishna consciousness, and that's what's taking them forward. But there may be some areas where they're weak in Krishna consciousness. You know, social, economic, you know, political, education, sensual, whatever it is, some area. And so if you happen to argue on that point, then there may be difficulty. Because they may tend to agree with the karmis. But the point is, even the karmis are mechanically right, what's their purpose? So it's wrong. So in principle, they're wrong. So even though they may have a point there, what's the purpose to it? Right? So the purpose is that all human beings have the equality that they can all serve Krishna from their positions. So because they're in these different positions, then they can still have the same equal spiritual opportunity, because that's the buzzword, right? Equal spiritual opportunity, right? But that's because you can use your position to serve Krishna and get the same spiritual benefit as someone else using a different position. But when we say equal spiritual opportunity, we mean the external. So we're talking neophyte philosophy here. We're not talking vijnanamoy of I'm the soul, I'm not the body, because if I'm the soul, not the body, what do I care what the body is? So my body is this body. The Shastra says this body does this work. Like that, so therefore I do it. What do I care? I'm not the body. But because I don't want to do that work, I want to do another work, therefore I'm identifying with the body. So where's this advanced realization? It's a very neophyte position. All it is you're using the philosophy to get... You know, before you would just, you know, use politics to argue your position. Now you throw in philosophy also. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the whole point is that so then it's about serving Krishna. And the other thing is that Krishna functions in this. And Krishna does his duties according to this. So if you want to hang out with Krishna, you're going to have to be following Varnashram. In Navadvip, do they follow Varnashram or not? Right? Lord Chaitanya's Brahmins, he does different things. You know, as a student, he does one thing. As a household in another, as a sannyasi another, you know, like this, right? So that, what about when he's in Dwarka as a kshatriya, right? What about in Vrindavan as a vaishya, right? So that's the whole point, is that it's for him because it's pastimes. So there's nothing to gain, there's nothing to do, so it's just something to, it's a means of interaction. So the Varnashram system is how you can interact with other individuals in the context of serving Krishna. That's what it is. So if you look at it like that, do all these modern flaws apply to it? No. That's the whole point when it's connected to Krishna. Where's the flaw? Because yes, the Brahman can do this in this situation, but in another situation you can't do something. Right? So how is it going to work? Is that, no, I'm not this body, I want to be able to do this. Okay, so then take all the duties of that and follow that. But that's not what we want. We want, in this situation, I want to be able to do this. But in another situation, I don't want to be stuck by the same rules. Now I want to follow what's that. So I just want to get all the benefits of everything. So that's cheating. That's childish. You know, but someone is just more clever with the philosophy or with logic that it's thrown out and it sounds, oh yeah, we're not the body. You know. That makes sense. you know, but it makes about as much sense as, okay, you know, I'd like to do this. No, you can't do this. No, but Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so I want to do this. You know, it's about as logical as that, but because it's a term that we go, well, it resonates, so it works. Is that, yes.
It seems that a lot of confusion comes from modern day advertisements, because that's what they advertise.
Yes,
you can have this here, you can have a good family, but also you can drink, but you have to drink responsible, and you can party, but not... you can do that, but so...
Yeah, you can party as long as one of the persons in your group does not party, so he can drive you home.
Yeah.
So you're unrestricted as long as one person's restricted.
Yeah. So that makes a lot of confusion.
But why do we have to listen to them? They're only going... Basically, advertisement goes by what works.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that means the original guys, they're called madmen. Right? The original that made the big modern advertisement, that group of advertisers, they're called madmen. They're from Madison Avenue. Mm-hmm. Madison, madmen. You know, but they're also crazy because they come up with things that just no one would think before. And so, you know, they come up with that, but what they're looking at, what sells, that's all.
Yeah.
That's all. So the point is if you tell everybody that, because people want the impossible, right? Because when it said, you know, Chanakya says, who wants the impossible? So one of them is children. And as we discussed before, since there's no maturity on the spiritual platform, everybody is functioning as children. Right, they may have ability in other areas, and so if you throw in the other four alts on top of that, then you have, you know, double, you know, or triple, you know, how you say, you know, so you have the child, and you know that you know, it means a childish spiritual mentality, but then they're the woman, and then they happen to be, you know, the leader of a country or something like that. You know, you get three at once. You know, plus they're a bit crazy. You know, like that. What was her name? That not Contessa. Maybe she was a Contessa. Somewhere, I think, maybe in Transylvania or something like that. Totally nuts. Like that. Then you get four. You know? You know, so like that. You could just... It's just they see what works and go for it. Because people want the impossible. So, yes, you have. You know, it's like the Volvo commercials. You know, it'll do, you know, 0 to 100 in, you know, 3.2 seconds, but it's super safe and you can take, you know, be confident that your kids will be, you know, like this. And you know, they try to get both. One, they're trying to get the husband and the wife to want to buy it. But they're always trying these opposites, because opposites are always interesting. You know, you're breaking the rules, you're doing this. Oh, because to do this means I can't do that. No, you can do both. But how? No, all it is since when has their product ever done that? Right? You know, because the people who don't get involved in that, they know it's stupid. But at the same time, then they have other problems. Because they don't socially involve themselves, this and that. But people go along as part of the game. So the thing is we shouldn't take it too seriously, because there's principles behind it. Why we're discussing it that way is there's a principle behind here. They're trying to give you the impossible, because if you think you can get the impossible, you're willing to buy their product. But the point is you can't. The laws of nature are in charge, and it's going to go down the way they say. And so for them, they're doing, in one sense, technically, you know, good business technique, in that they're finding a way that you would appreciate and want to use their product. Therefore, you buy it. So on business level, they are. But because they're using techniques that aren't actually properly, or they're selling a product that's not actually proper, they'll get reactions from that. But business-wise, they're smart. So as the mood changes, then they change their mood. You know, the same guy is selling, let's say, a general shop. And, you know, everybody's down on the government and this and that. And we're, you know, wary of the government and, you know, all that kind of jazz. And so, you know, whatever it is, you know, he has all this funny postcards or hats or T-shirts that, you know, say all some kind of stupid stuff, you know, about the government. But then the next day, then they have 9/11, right? And then everybody is super nationalistic. So then from the day after that, he starts selling American flags. Yes. You know, small ones, big ones. You can put them on your car, hang them on this, and you'll do this and that, you know, make a coat out of it, whatever you want, like that. So, but you can't make it. It's against the law to make a coat out of it. But whatever. So he'll do that. Now, and as long as that's going, then it's great. And there, everybody's nationalistic and this and that. And the Iran, what is it? What was the war? Afghan war. You know, they're all like this and that and everything. You know, gung-ho. He's, you know, flag business is like, you know, off the charts. Then, you know, because the government's, you know, how you think, thinking that they're on a roll and all that and all that. And so then, they say, then our man Bush, you know, then he, what do you call it? Then, you know, thinks, okay, he's got the confidence, he can go into Iraq. Like that, he goes into Iraq, and then all the pro-government kind of rah-rah goes away. And then, you know, flag sales is down. Mm-hmm. You know? So he just rolls with it. That's the whole thing. What people want, they just sell. So that's the whole point in advertise. Means you don't need to advertise stuff you actually require. You know? Means you can have something where you can find, it's just like, let's say you go into, I remember I went to the, what do you call it? Fabric, not fabric district, textile. So one thing, there's an area in New York, X amount of blocks in this. Everything in there is just fabric. All varieties of fabric. You know, you name it. But it's unlimited in how many stores are there and how many floors. How do you know what to do? So they have a kiosk that's actually all of the guys, you know, how you say, put money into to run it. So you go to them. I'm looking for this particular kind of exact details of what you want. And they'll tell you which shop to go to or which shops. They'll give you a list. Okay, these three shops have that.
Information, it's called. Information.
Yeah, so it's information. So that kind of thing is fine. You know, like that. But they're not advertising cloth. There's no advertisements. You know, or let you know that this place is here. But it's just a matter of it's here. You know what I'm saying? But the other things, and the problem is they're trying to make you interested in something you do not require. Right? You live in the city. The speed limit there is, you know, what is it in Europe? In the city, 50 kilometers an hour. On what day of the week or which hour within 24 do you require a car that does 300 or 400 kilometers an hour? Right? You can never drive it more than 50. Right? So that's the problem, is that they have to sell you on it because you don't need it. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. So therefore, they're advertising things you absolutely don't require. Right? But the point is they have to make money off of people wanting something. So therefore, since they don't want what you have, therefore then you do. Otherwise, it's just the standard thing. Everybody sells the same stuff, you know, 20 guys selling the same oranges and the same basket, you know, on the street there. But you have your guy you go to.
Yes.
You know? And that's the funny. All 20 guys are there. All 20 make money.
Yes.
You know? Like that. You know, so it's just that's the point, is you will make your money. But so therefore you could follow the rules, just sell things that people require, you know, good quality of it and all this and that, and then it works. So then you don't get the reactions. But because of this, they throw in the mode of passion, you know, play with that passion and ignorance, and then people become bewildered. So then if we spend too much time in these areas, we'll become bewildered. Because you become like you associate. So the whole point is you're supposed to give association, not take, when it comes to bad. You give good association when you're in the company of those that don't have good or are not good association. So we become distracted because we're not looking at the primary. how does it please Krishna? Why would it please Krishna? You know, and everybody thinks, no, but nobody else likes, and no, but it's not about being popular. Right? We want to expand Krishna consciousness that the whole world is interested, but it's not by being popular. Because popular, especially nowadays, is so temporary. You know what I'm saying? Like Elvis, they're still talking about. He still does weddings today and stuff like that. Still shows up at parties. You know, so that means it's been what now? 60, 70 years. Right? And stuff like that. And during his time, it's like sort of that. But nowadays, how long is somebody popular? You know, it can be 6 months, maybe a couple of years, and they disappear. They're the big thing, and they disappear. So why would you want to be popular? You know, it doesn't have any. There's no shelf life. So we take other things. You know, classic. No, that's always there. They still build buildings with using Roman and Greek, you know, architecture. You know, I mean, so if you want to make a really first class building, you use that architecture. You don't use modern architecture because you know after a few years it'll be stupid. Right? You know, no. Like that, you know. It's just like people still go to see the, how you say, you know, the Louvre, Versailles, any of these places. What do you call it? Colosseum, Notre Dame. You know, any of these places where they have these things, people are still going, and it's hundreds, it's thousands of years. Right? Like Notre Dame could not have been built in modern architecture because it took 100 years to build it. So they would have had, you know, it would have been so, you know, it would have looked like a Picasso or something if they kept changing every 5, 10 years the architecture like that. And yeah, and there's other things that they built it and then after 100 years they add something to it, you know, a portico or a tower, things. I saw something the other day on. Very famous. I don't even remember where it is. It's been changing over the last, and it's a very old building. Maybe it's it in Barcelona. There's something. It started off as a very simple kind of building, and they've kept adding on to it, and very, very elaborate architecture. They just keep adding. You know, every few hundred years, somebody adds, you know, does something. Like that. And so these things then never get old. So the point is it's the classic that doesn't get old. You know, that you're giving it life, you're giving it, you know, things like that. That's what you need to do. But the point is it's the classic that remains. This modern being popular and all that, that's for Shudras. And just as quickly as you're the greatest thing, then tomorrow they know who wants to even talk about it. You know what I'm saying? So the approach is wrong. Why would we want to take that? Why would we want to be that? And what's the cause of that? Then that'll come, you know, from the Ionians, that relativity. We take the duality and use it to the materialistic advantage. You know, everything's dual, so therefore then nothing's right, nothing's wrong. So then what does it do? It leaves it's up to me. Because if there is no standard, you know, this devotee said this, that devotee on the same verse said that. So now what to do? It's my decision. So I'll come up with the third alternative. Is we getting anywhere here? Or this is just so much talk. Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that we don't care about those things. That's why if we're focused on the primary, then we see how to apply the primary into the contemporary. And if you can take advantage of these contemporary aspects, you can. But as soon as they change, you move with it. It's not that it's 2018, you're still talking mid-90s political correctness. You know what I'm saying? Because nowadays, a lot of people who are liberal, they're against political correctness. They're into liberal, but against political correctness, because it's politics. It seemed before that it was a liberal stance, but it's actually a political stance. You know, you just have to look at the word, political correctness. Like that. So that's the thing, is it's we move with the times. You present it. Like Prabhupada could present to the hippies, he could present to the, you know, to the aristocrats, he could present to administration, he could deal with the, you know, the Bowery bums. He could deal with anybody. So that's the whole thing. This thing is, oh no, you have to get, this is the group. It's not a matter of it's a group. It's a matter of being able to present Krishna consciousness to individuals that they can relate to it and take it up. And so everybody having their particular nature, then it may be more or less easier to work in certain areas or not. Does that make sense? Yeah. And if someone else doesn't have that kind of background, they'll work in a different area. But it's not that one's right, one's wrong. It's a matter of, it has to be about Krishna. Because even you use these areas, if it's on the primary, it will work better. And if the more you're distracted by the secondary, by the externals, then the more you'll get some successes, but you'll also have some problems. You know, as I probably mentioned about using rock music as a way to attract people. The problem is then it's about the music. It's not actually necessarily about the philosophy. You know, I can remember seeing some kids, young kids, they're enthusiastic about a particular song. They really like the song and they're jumping up and down about the song and singing the lyrics of the song. They have no idea what those lyrics mean. And those lyrics are really, really weird. You know, but all it is, it's got a good beat, you know, the way the rhythm of the words and the what do you call it, phrasing. Oh, you know, it's a happening song. But they have no idea what it means. So that's the whole thing, is people like the rock music, but okay, so then it's there and that, but it'll be limited to that. But then as soon as you don't produce rock music they like, they'll move on to the next group. Right? You know, while then you were presenting the Maha Mantra, you're doing kirtan and that, and then you present a nice tune, then that's there. Because we, Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, we sing nice tunes because it's attractive to Krishna. Rather than we're singing nice tunes to be attractive to the people. Because then we're saying, because of my tunes, I'll make people Krishna conscious. People will be attracted to Krishna consciousness because of a secondary element. But the point is attraction to Krishna comes from Krishna, not from us. So it has to be, we're connecting people to Krishna. That's why they're attracted. If we're connecting them just to music or to this or that, it'll always fail. It'll always fail. Like that. So Krishna consciousness is not about the external. We use the external because that's how you function. That's just how culture works. You know, relationship, rasa, it all works that way. But it's about the primary, that's Krishna. And if that's kept as the front, then one doesn't become bewildered. So? Yeah. Yeah, good.
So Maharaj, if the idea is to connect people to Krishna and to Krishna system.
Yes.
Of course. So how it's possible to, as a society, to really present Krishna consciousness without following for the members of Anashan Dharma?
You start with the principles that are there. Because it's always about principles. Because it's just like, if someone's chanting Hare Krishna and likes chanting, likes associating with devotees, likes taking prasad, even if, let's say, they themselves and their lifestyle, it's not what you recommend.
Yes.
But they like to, let's say, you know, come for the Sunday program, or, you know, whenever there's a festival or the Harinam goes, like to, you know, go spend a little time or things like that. That's the essential point. That their attraction to devotees, to the holy name, associating with devotees, taking prasad. Then with time, as they become purified, then you encourage them into, you know, trying to adjust the life that makes it more favorable. Right? It means, in other words, they like what the devotees are doing and this and that, but let's say they're not vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, that they like devotees and all that, they're chanting, they're taking prasad, that's more powerful than the effects of not being vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But now at time, as they get purified by that, then it may come up in a conversation, so you're going to encourage them to be vegetarian, because then from that, then they're going to how you say, there's not going to be the sinful reactions that come from that is going to slow down their advancement.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense? But it's not because they're vegetarian, then that's our success.
Yes.
You know, because some devotees just preach being vegetarian or nowadays being vegan or whatever, and that's a success. No, that's not. If they're chanting, that's a success. But as soon as it comes up, naturally then you do that. Right? Mm-hmm. And you have the advantage because now you can offer to Krishna.
Yes.
Right? Because before that, then, okay, they understand, appreciate prasad, and that concept, then it's about, you have to thank God that by His arrangement you have food to eat. And so then they say their grace or whatever it is like that. They do. But as they get purified, then they can find, no, they could offer that food directly to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's not vegetarian, they can't actually offer it directly to Krishna. They can thank Krishna that they've gotten their food.
Yeah.
You know, as a meat eater, then that's their food. You know, just like, you know, the dog eats this, the cat eats that, so they eat whatever they eat. That's their food.
Mm-hmm.
But with time, they can see is no, but there's a higher principle. I could serve Krishna through this. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, so like this, and then you attract them by that, and you show yes. In Europe, then, you know, they weren't that strongly, depending on where they were, especially down towards the Mediterranean and that kind of side, they weren't actually didn't eat meat every day.
Mm.
Like that. You know, it was more of a Sunday thing. And then Friday was fish, and then the other days was, you know, bread and this and vegetables and that. They were basically, I think, up to World War II, kind of. Then the culture changed. Right? But otherwise, then that's what they did. You know, now, let's say Eskimos, they're probably not, you know, doing a lot of, you know, baked vegetables, you know, like that. You know, huh? Maybe Alaska, yes, but not vegetables. Yeah, so, you know, so then there's a different kind of a thing, but then they would still understand that there's that and they're getting because of this, because you can go out and not get something, you can go out and get something, so it's by God's grace you're getting. And like this, and so they'll advance. But as soon as they can follow the standards, you would always encourage them. But because it pleases Krishna. So the problem comes up as either is Niyamagraha. One group will tend to not follow the rules because they don't understand and they're just being modern and practical and intellectual and all that kind of thing. Or the other group then is following the rules because they appreciate tradition and all that. They also consider themselves very practical and that. But the difficulty in Niyamagraha is they're both, it's about the external. Oh, we don't need to follow the Vedic. Oh, if you don't follow the Vedic, you can't be Krishna conscious. So it's no, bhakti is beyond these things. Vedic is the natural form to use. That's what they do in the spiritual world. But the point is it can be applied everywhere. Right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then from there it can come up and up.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's a matter of seeing the opportunity. So the first opportunity is the primary. And as you can add secondary to give the support, you add it. But the idea is that the person, you know, gets the idea, oh, he'd like to wear a dhoti, and then you don't encourage him because, no, you don't have to do that. You know, it's all external. You just do whatever. Then that's wrong. As long as they're just wearing what they wear, then they wear what they wear. But as soon as there's some interest in that, like, you know, I see somebody, one guy always wears karmi clothes, never wears anything else. But then I noticed he started showing up at the temple with a chudder on his shoulder. You know, a wool chudder, you know, like that, but on his shoulder, folded up with a suit or whatever he was wearing. And then but only for the temple. Then after some time, he figured out how practical. He always wears it. Even he goes to the office and that, he has his chudder on his shoulder. You know, so they start to pick up like that. You know, so like that. And so, and I think even once for something, I forget what it was, some festival and that, even he'll wear a kurta. He'll still wear the pants, but he'll wear a kurta.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like that. Yeah, just like this, and then his partner, then they'll wear saris on special occasions.
Yes.
But most of the time they don't. So you encourage, it's nice.
Mm.
You know? And so, but the thing is, oh, you know, you don't have to do that, whereas, you know, you have to wear, like, you know, one temple preacher went there and they, you know, they invited him to give class, but they told him that the rule in the temple, you have to wear karmic clothes. No one can wear devotional clothes. Like that. You know, so that's, how is that progressive? You know, I think, oh, it's for the people, but the people, you know, how do you say? Probably most of those people in their religious pursuits follow guys that wear, you know, 1,000-year-old wardrobes. You know, like all their bishops, cardinals, pope, and everything, they all wear weird stuff. You know, by modern standards, you know. And literally, it's designed 1,000 years ago. And they haven't changed in 1,000 years, and it's worked, so why won't it work today? You know, so traditional clothes is like not a problem. You know what I'm saying? So, but they'll make a rule, oh no, then you'll frighten the people off. Yeah, maybe we'll frighten off a certain group of people, but then you'll attract others who will be serious and actually be able to do something in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Yes.
Raj, previously you explained that philosophy not necessarily is going to change our identity, our emotional involvement in the process most probably will. And also yesterday you gave the examples that yogis, they meditate, but it's like from a neutral state.
Yes.
But then demons, they're emotionally very much involved. They hate Krishna, that they, whatever it is.
Right.
And then they go to Krishna sooner than those yogis.
Yes.
So the question, how can we get our emotions involved in the process of Krishna consciousness? Because most probably our emotions are somewhere else, our interest is somewhere else in Krishna consciousness. We do, because we know it's good for us. Mm-hmm.
So intellectually we're following.
Exactly.
Basically, that's why the whole cult, see, the emotions, where do we express emotions? It's generally through all the cultural and all those kind of aspects. So that's why then we see that the Vedas and the Acharyas and Srila Prabhupada has given the Vedic cultural environment where the emotions can be involved. But then we're supposed to approach it and apply it according to how the Acharyas are saying. This is where the difference will be, you could say, between the Gaudiya approach and the Vedic approach. Vedic meaning it's the Shastra, it's bona fide, it's following the Veda, that's why it's Vedic. But within that, there'll be the application of those who are smartest. So that's going to have one application. Then the Vaishnavas are going to have, you know, a refinement of that. And so that's then what we want, is that how to follow the Vedic according to what our Acharyas say. And then it all works very nicely. If we just take the rule itself without the purport of the Acharyas, then we may not appreciate. So then we'll either become more like, you know, one side of the Niyamagraha, we're just following the rule, and then when we don't get results, then we don't see why we're doing it, so then we reject it and go to the other side. You know, or back and forth, whatever. So it's a matter of that. The logic, all these different things, the culture, the rules and regulations are to create a favorable environment for doing. So what is the whole point? What is it that, let's say, someone who's, let's say, a smarta is following Varnashram? There's a good chance all these demons are also, but just take from the thing, but the demon's not. Why is the demon attaining Krishna, and that smart is not? What's the key element there?
Their absorption in Krishna.
Their absorption in Krishna. So now, does the Shastra say, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna?
Yes.
So that's the essential point. They're doing that, though externally what they're doing is not your ideal. But they have the primary, so it works. It doesn't mean that they don't get a reaction for their secondary. Right, these demons are, Shishupal is getting his head cut off. You know, and while he's talking, so he's still talking when his head's flying through space. Right, so that just shows how absorbed he is in Krishna. Right? While the smart is not. To him it's just rituals. And so, when it comes to worshipping Vishnu, let's say he's a Vaishnava smarta, so then he does only according to what he's supposed to do. And outside of that, he's done, because his consciousness is actually on something else. So even though the demon is totally materialistic, he is always remembering Krishna, because it's only those demons that we're talking about. We're not talking about, you know, small-time demons, you know. You know, the guy, the neighbor who always harasses the devotees, we're not talking about that guy. Right? You know. So that's the point, is that they're actually following the principal point of Krishna consciousness. So they're practicing smarana of the nine processes. You know? And always. Well, the smarta may do some archanam, but only certain times, and actually not really about remembering Krishna, because he doesn't think the form of the Lord's eternal. Well, the demon is not thinking the form is eternal or not. Just he thinks he's eternal, then he'll think Krishna is eternal. Not really philosophically, but you know, he's eternally a problem. You know, I could live eternally, but then this guy Krishna is going to give me problem eternally. So that's the whole point that makes it so ununderstandable, is that we make the mistake of trying to make Krishna conscious about the external. But it's not. At the same time, is because we are so conditioned to the external does have a great effect on our consciousness. That's why certain external environments are recommended. You know, does that make sense? Just like, now you don't see it as much, but in the, you know, that time, 60s, 70s, like that hippies liked long hair. It was part of their identity. If you had short hair, if you had a shaved head, you weren't a hippie. Right? You know, like that. So basically all had long hair. Right? I think, what's his name? One or two of the guys didn't. They wore suits and stuff like this. But
Ginsburg.
Huh?
Allen Ginsberg?
Yeah, Allen Ginsberg. He didn't have long hair. He looked like a bohemian. So then Prabhupada insists that if they're going to move into the temple, they could come to the temple with their long hair and take prasad, take part in the kirtan, do service there all day, but they can't live there. If they live there, they have to shave. It's like simultaneous. because the identity is so strong, if you have long hair, you still identify as a hippie. And because many who were in the temple were hippies, then they like long hair, then they'll become attracted. And they think, well, he has long hair, I can have long hair. So it's just, no, they have to shave. Because if you shave, then you're not a hippie anymore. You're not going to identify as a hippie. So it'll have a great impact on the identity, because the identity is not overly useful. Right? Well, if you're following the Vedic culture, then what do you have to change? Let's say someone's a smarta. Okay? Now, he's wearing a dhoti, he does puja, he wears dhoti, he wears unsewn cloth, he wears dhotis and chuddars, like that. He's got a shaved head, he's got a sika, right? He puts on tilak, he wears his Brahmin thread, like that. You know, he walks around barefoot and, you know, in the temple, in the house, he gets up in the morning, he takes his bath, puts on his clothes. So, what does he have to change?
Only the consciousness. Only the consciousness.
Yeah, the consciousness. Like that. And possibly the principle of tilak, he's putting that he might have to change the style of tilak. Huh? Yes. Like that. He just has to, you know, turn his fingers a bit.
Less number of lines.
Yeah, less number of lines, like that. But then you have the one down here, so you have one, you know, these two, but these two. Yeah. So, but basically his lifestyle doesn't change. His food doesn't change, that he cooks, the cleanliness, the standards he has changed, the standards of his house doesn't change, how he offers to the all these things, none of it changes. The main thing changes is the consciousness. So for him, what's going to be the main thing that you're going to have to see that he doesn't get distracted by?
To show how he's doing for primary, whatever he
does. Yes, it's for primary. In other words, he doesn't get too distracted by the rituals. He starts harassing other devotees. No, you got to do this. No, it's this, you know. So it's he's doing it for the primary. You know? So that's why the Vedic system is recommended, because then when you do become Krishna conscious, all the things that you're doing are already in line with what they do in the spiritual world. But if you're not following it, then much of what you do is not at all in line, and so then it has, you know, that needs some adjustment. The principle is always there, because it's all, you can't change the principle of what people do. They're going to eat, sleep, make, and defend, but now you connect it to Krishna. How do you go about that? How do you eat? Right? Does that make sense? And then it's just, all it is it's favorable, it's useful. Is that okay? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupāda ki.